Welcome back to the Dialogue Studio. This podcast series is hosted by the Ikeda Center for Peace, Learning, and Dialogue. In it, we explore the transformational practice of dialogue and why it is important, especially in this current moment. In these episodes, you will hear from individuals from all walks of life sharing what dialogue means to them and how they are practicing it in their daily lives. We will also introduce our founder, Daisaku Ikeda's philosophy of dialogue and the various approaches and strategies we practice here at the center. Hello, everyone. Thank you so much for tuning in today and also happy spring. I hope you are all doing well. As we shared in a few of our previous episodes, because of the pandemic, we decided to bring our in-person dialogue night series into the virtual space last year. Though nothing can really replace the feeling of being physically together and engaging in dialogue, we also feel so fortunate for this past year because we were able to make so many wonderful new friends who joined us from different parts of the world. One of these friends is Andrea Rahani, who also goes by Andy. Andy, who is based in Chicago, has joined all of our virtual Dialogue Nights events and has become such a big part of our virtual community. She is an Assyrian-Iraqi-American prose and poet writer. Her writing has been published in Grist, a journal of the literary arts, Make, a literary magazine, and elsewhere. For the last 5 years, Andy has taught English and ESL to multilingual students in higher education in virtual and non-virtual spaces. Currently, she is working toward her PhD in curriculum studies at DePaul University. I could probably go on for a few more minutes about all the things Andy does, but most importantly, she is such a beautiful human being, and so I'm so excited for all of you to meet her. Today, we'll be talking about our recent virtual dialogue nights on burnout, how Andy is engaging with Daisaku Ikeda's philosophy, and the role that dialogue has played in her life, both personally and professionally. So with that, let's hear from Andy. Hello, Andy. Thank you so much for being here with us. I'm very honored. Our listeners probably can't see, but we're color coordinated. So we're both wearing black and white, though you look much cooler than me. I'm so happy to have you here. And I was just thinking today as I was sharing just a few minutes ago, every time we talk, I feel like so refreshed and ready to dig deeper in my life. And so I'm just very excited for our listeners to get to know you as well. So maybe we can start out with introductions. If you can share your name and where you're from or where you're located now and what are your interests and anything you'd like to share with us about yourself.
Thank you, Lillian. Thank you also for having me. I also feel the same way about getting super excited to talk to you. Well, my name is Andrea Rahani, but everybody calls me Andy, and I'm from Chicago, Illinois, and that's also where I'm located. Few of my interests: I love reading. I take a book with me everywhere. I also love to write. I write every morning, and I take the train to work and school, and that's usually my writing time. That's how I start my day, and I like to also not be on social media in the mornings, especially. I'm not super on it often, but I definitely make a point to not start my day that way. It's a really important part of just my human practice. And that leads me into one of my third huge interests, in addition to language and reading and writing, but meditating. Just being really mindful, to me, that's a really important practice, and I kind of equate it with reading.
Yeah, thank you so much, Andy. I think I might have asked you this before, but just in terms of your passion and love for reading and writing, did that start when you were really young? Or I had a sort of a love-hate relationship with reading because I really struggled with it. And then I had an English teacher in high school that encouraged me, someone who really believed in me. And then I started reading again. And so I was just wondering, where did that start for you?
That's such a great question. Reading has always been a huge part of my life. Before I became so cool, obviously. Now.
Very cool. The coolest.
Thank you. Thank you. Yes. It's going to be on my gravestone, the coolest. But reading has I think a lot of it had to do with my parents working all the time, and after school program was me walking to the library. And the library has played a really big part of my life. The librarians were my friends, and I didn't have a lot of friends growing up because I was just a really weird kid. Still am weird, but I like to be in my head a lot. It's kind of how I think and how I'm able to kind of absorb, but also kind of make understanding of the world. And I just need a lot of alone time to do that. And that's part of why I love reading. It helps me kind of see different perspectives. So ever since I was younger, I was always reading, but the library had so many free programs and still does. And it was called Booking with a Buddy, where a peer, but they were older, would read to me, and then later I would read to them.
Oh, wow.
This is how I spent my free time. And then I became that older buddy. And the library was just a place where it was full of knowledge. And to me, it was also a place where I was able to just talk to people. I was in book club, and I got to keep the books, which to me was just a huge thing, because books are expensive. And that's really how I became just such an avid reader, I think. It was just that sense of community I felt.
I really love that. Thank you for sharing that with us, Andy. And I know one of the questions that I wanted to ask you later is about how you became such a dialogic person. And I think this story sort of sheds light on that, because Mr. Ikeda often talks about how our inner dialogue is important to our ability to have outer dialogue, our dialogue with others. And so I was imagining little Andy having so many inner dialogues as you were, you know, reading books and engaging with other people. So I'll come back to that maybe a little bit later. So thank you for sharing that with us. So Andy, you know, one of the great fortunes we've had of hosting our dialogue nights virtually is that we were able to meet you. Because as many of our listeners know, our dialogue nights used to be in person. And then when we went into the virtual space, Andy joined us from Chicago. And so thank you, Andy. And so I wanted to ask, maybe if we can sort of flip the questions a little bit, Andy. If you can share a little bit about how you learned about dialogue nights and sort of what was in your mind the first time you attended and what interested you to participate in a space like that.
Yeah, thank you, Lillian. I like the flip. Keeping me on my toes when I think you're going to zigzag. I'm here for that. The first time I attended, it was actually an invitation from Dr. Gula, who mentioned dialogue nights. And I had taken a class with him, post-humanism with him, and we were being introduced to Ikeda's concepts. And it was about the poetic spirit. And that was the first time I went to dialogue nights. And I was so interested in, well, what does that mean? And I got super excited about kind of that celebration of a poet. And I don't hear that often. I think for me, I hear a lot sometimes that we need poets in the world, and in these spaces I inhabit, whether it's my student self, whether it's my work, like, you know, my work identity self, or, you know, just the human in general. If I'm going to zoom out, we hear we need poetry, but then at the same time, often we'll hear there's no space for poetry in this space. And it's kind of like that, this weird tension I sometimes struggle to navigate. And that was kind of this really big, when I was reading about dialogue nights prior to attending, and then also when I was there during dialogue nights virtually, it was just like such a comfort, where I didn't feel like I was being shunned. In a way, sometimes I feel that way when we kind of exclude, oh, we don't need poetry here, it's too confusing. And when I attended, I don't think I was expecting such a, like, we're all poets. And it was just so, to me, that was such a beautiful moment. And I felt so much community, even though we were in such different spaces, like literally geographically. And to me, that was just like, that in itself is poetry, to feel that type of not just community, but also, to me, that's the way that we get to compassion and empathy. to, and I think that also ties into the global citizenship. So to me, when I attended, it was like all of these light bulbs kind of hitting because I was learning the concepts in class, but then also like actually experiencing the discussion and the dialogue of what the poetic spirit is and how Ikeda kind of encompasses that into his philosophy of human education.
Yeah.
Hopefully that makes sense.
It does. It does. And I remember, yeah, meeting you for the first time in that space. And yeah, just like I could feel your willingness and openness to be there. And it was so beautiful. And something you mentioned just now, Andy, about how we're all poets. And it was encouraging for you to sort of reaffirm that in your life when you attended this first event. And I think you are someone who has taught me that, or has made me want to believe that to be true, that I am a poet as well, even though Andy is like this amazing poet. But I think Ikeda really believes that too, you know, in that we're all poets and we all have this poetic spirit. So I was just wondering, sort of as a side note, like, what does it mean for you when you say we're all poets? Like, even someone who's not a poet in a traditional sense.
Yeah, Lillian, I love this question because I truly do believe everyone is a poet. I think it's a matter of whether that individual wants to see that, if that makes sense. Like, I don't think believing necessarily means seeing. And I'll unpack what I mean there. I think you don't necessarily have to write poetry to be a poet. I think one can see poetically, but that doesn't necessarily mean that they write poetry, and that's okay. I think that like being a poet can look differently, and I think a lot of that comes from, I guess, how I see that in like an art world. I think, and that's really where I started before I entered into education. There's just so many, like there's multitude of ways of seeing, and I think of the Walt Whitman quote, "I contain multitudes. We have different selves." And Whitman's one of my favorite poets. But I bring that up because that's part of being a poet. I think being a poet is just, to me, the willingness to see beyond the self and see the self at the same time. And I think that ties into Ikeda's concept of inner dialogue, but then also that extension of the self. And I think that is a really hard thing to do. But I also think that willingness to try, even if we don't get it perfectly, the willingness to fail, that part is being a poet. And I think tapping into that possibility is all I need to know for someone to be a poet.
Yeah, I had this thought, Andy, when you were sharing that. Oh, so being a poet is like being a human being, like all, yes, you know, to be a poet. Yes. So I just thought, oh my gosh, I really want to think about that a little more in my own life. There's this quote from Ikeda that you might have heard of before about the poetic spirit. And he says that the poetic spirit can be found in any human endeavor, which I, you know, really love. And I think you know, expressed so well. And then he says, it may be vibrantly active in the heart of a scientist engaged in research, in the odd pursuit of truth. When the spirit of poetry lives within us, even objects do not appear as mere things. Our eyes are trained on an inner spiritual reality. A flower is not just a flower. The moon is no mere clump of matter floating in the skies. Our gaze fixed on a flower or the moon, we intuitively perceive the unfathomable bonds that link us to the world. So, yeah.
Yes. I love this quote. Thank you for reading that. It's one of my favorites. I really feel deeply about this quote. I feel deeply because when I'm thinking of my teacher self and I tell my students, you guys are poets. You're so deep. You're undercover. And they all smile because they're like, what? But I think it's important to call them that, not just to say it just to say it, but I actually do believe that because we get in touch with our feelings. I think that there's a lot of teaching that's beyond the curriculum, the matricial curriculum anyway. I think a lot of it has to do with teaching and learning, because I think it's learner-centered. It's not just student-centered or teacher-centered. It's learner-centered, because I think we're both learners in this dialogic experience. But I think it's a matter of how to be human. I feel like that's really what I'm teaching, and I think that that is the poet's practice, to feel all aspects deeply of being human and not meet them.
Yeah, I feel like you're answering all the questions I sent to you, Andy, in advance, especially like I'm making a lot of connections in my mind now about, oh, the, you know, the relationship between poetry and dialogue, and that both of them, you know, Ikeda believes that are part of the process of us becoming fully human. And so maybe just sort of shifting gears a little bit towards this year. It's 2022, and I know we've all been going through a lot, and we just had a dialogue night that you attended to, Andy, on burnout. And I did share at the event that it came from a small dialogue we had with some of our youth committee members about what they're going through this year and how it feels like a continuation of the last 2 years and just feeling different levels of burnout. And so I wanted to take a few minutes to sort of reflect on that dialogue nights with you, and one, just wondering how you've been doing in 2022. And then for the burnout dialogue nights, like, how was that for you, and sort of what stood out to you in terms of burnout? And, you know, the whole point of the dialogue nights was to also explore the power of connection as a way to transform our own feelings of exhaustion or isolation or hopelessness. And so, yeah, did you feel the power of connection through the event and relating to how you've been processing this year? Yeah.
Thank you, Lillian. Yes. That particular dialogue nights was really special to me. It was, I loved the topic because not only do I think it's relatable, I think it's something that we're all trying to understand how to manage. I spent most of the dialogue nights when we were in big group listening, but to me, listening is a form of dialogue, which sounds weird, but sometimes I need time to think and process. And I think listening is like this active choice to really hear another person and not focus on myself, if that makes sense. And that was a really important part for me when I was thinking of burnout and reflecting prior, because I like to reflect before and then after. I'm a big reflector. And something when I was reviewing my notes that I made to myself before our talk right now, I wrote down what compassion fatigue is. And to me, you posed questions for us to think about, well, what is burnout? And in my small group, we talked a lot about purpose, the sense of why, right? How to ground ourselves, and how do we manage it, whether it's, you know, SMART goals, taking, you know, our tasks. And for me, a lot of it, when I was looking at my notes and then something that I spoke about, was having compassion for myself and others. I think making a choice to not be as accessible is something that I think I actively have to do all the time. And I think technology makes it really hard not to feel guilty, not to feel like you're not good, not to feel like you can't be there for a friend or someone else. But if we can't kind of heal ourselves in some way or kind of make sure we're okay, we can't be there for anyone else. We have to make sure we're grounded first. And I think this tied to technology, and I think technology is great because we're in dialogue right now due to technology. It's not that I think it's evil. I think it's a matter of being mindful of when to use it and how we use it and think about, and I think this ties for me anyway into burnout, because I want to be there for, let's say, for my students all the time. And I want to be not just a great student, but I also want to be a great teacher. And then navigating, and a great friend, and a great girlfriend, and navigating all of these different things through technology, I have to be really mindful, because I think when I'm not, I'm just always on it. And then I don't stop. And then I'm exhausted. I'm beyond fatigued. And then I get cranky. And then I'm not the best version of myself. And so that was something that I took away, because I think about how often do I ask, what kind of person is this device making me? How am I using this? What's my intention? how am I being present? And I really liked, Lillian, how you talked about presence, because to me that was also a really big part of burnout. And I loved the meditation practice that we did. I actually do that with my students sometimes, because I think this is part when we're not mindful or we're not present, it's part of the fracturing of the mind. Like feeling, how much pressure am I putting in my tippy toes, in my hands? We use our hands so often, our fingertips. We type on our computer, we're texting. Like are we saying thank you, fingertips?
Yeah. Yeah, that exercise, one of our youth committee members led us through this grounding activity. And I wasn't joking, Andy, when I said that I felt like she healed my stomach. Because I felt this, and I was really sleepy after this grounding activity. But I think it's because I had not listened to how exhausted my body was, because I'm so high functioning. And so to like feel every part of, like, it just made me realize how much I'm not connected with my own body, even though I'm like living in it every single day. So
I understand.
Yeah, I did feel a release in my stomach, because I was actually allowing myself to listen to my body. And then I just wanted to go to sleep, even though the event was still going on. So
Yeah. I love what you just said. I love listening to the body. I think that is like a huge theme for me in terms of like interconnection. And I think that relates to Ikeda too. The mind, the body, and the spirit. And I think that they are always in dialogue with one another. And I think sometimes it's a matter of, are we listening? Are we listening, you know, to our feet that are telling us, I'm in pain? Our stomachs, our hearts, our, you know, our hands, all of these things, they're always signs. It's just, I think, a matter of, are we looking and are we kind of being present to hear them and see them?
I was wondering, Andy, so at the dialogue nights, we had an activity where everyone was in the breakouts. This is sort of a selfish question, because I really wanted to know, because we were all only in one breakout, because we can only be in one place at a time. But we, just for the listeners, we put people in groups and we did provide questions, but we encouraged everybody to really focus on the aspect of connection and get to know each other and ask their own questions. And so my group, we started out, I think, with one of the questions, and then we just ended up talking about so many different things. And I was wondering how your group was. Like, did you guys stick to the questions? I know it was, what did you want to be growing up? Or if you could be anywhere in the world, where would you be? Did you stick to them? Or did you all come up with other questions?
Yeah, we did a hybrid approach. We talked about both of those questions. Of course, we did a hybrid. Everyone who knows me always laughs, because I can't. It seems I can't pick just one thing in anything that I do. I'm always like, oh yeah, we did a combo play. We went deeply into to those first two questions that you just mentioned, and I'll transition to the hybrid aspect of it. But it was really interesting to hear in my group, because I was with a lot of teachers, and two of them were teachers already, and one was for elementary school, and the other was teacher, but then kind of going into an admin aspect, and that's what they knew. And then the third person, he said that he didn't know what he wanted to do when he was younger. There was just, you know, nothing. So he was so curious of finding out what we wanted to be and who we wanted to be when we were younger. And I thought that question was so interesting, because it goes back into the imagination part, you know, when you're younger, like, who I want to be. It's so exciting. And I also was slightly self-conscious, I remember, because I was like, oh, my answer's not that, it's not that cool, I guess. but that's just probably me being
me.
I'm
sure that's not true, yeah.
I mean, I had said to be an artist, to be a writer. To me, it's not even just what I wanted to be. It's going to sound weird. I've always felt kind of called to writing and to poetry. It's just kind of how I've just navigated the world. I think, to me, my teaching practice now, and it really is my poetry practice. It's how I, like, I've never done teacher training before, and so the methods I use in the classroom are the same methods that I would, or maybe I stretch them, but how I approach a poem. Curiosity of, ooh, why are you doing this? Tell me more. Being in dialogue. And I thought, like, hearing that, and I was really interested in hearing everybody else's of how, like, to be in community, that was a common theme that we had. And I think that ties straight on into connection. And then it transitioned into more of a hybrid approach, because we started with the second question of where would you be? And we had like travel. And to me, and I'm laughing at myself right now because I do travel, but I travel in a library. And because I said, oh, I want to be in a library. Because when I'm reading, I'm constantly traveling. I'm not just in a story, whether it's, I actually don't read a lot of fiction. I read more memoir, nonfiction, criticism. I mean, I love stories, and I think we're constantly telling each, like, ourselves stories. We tell our stories in like the Joan Didion quote, in order to live. That's how we live. We tell stories. And I think stories are just so powerful. And to me, it's kind of just jumping in time and jumping around time when I'm reading and with time. And that's how we talked about that. And we transitioned into connections with our family, and because a lot of people were talking about places to actually go to, whether it's a country or to see family in a different country. And then we talked a lot about using technology to connect. One person shared that their grandmother, they text each other, and they like Zoom calls. And I was like, wow, this grandmother is tech savvy. Like, my mother just got an email address like last year.
Oh my goodness.
Yes, she despises. She's like, what is this?
I will send your mother an email, Andy. Hello.
she constantly forgets her password, even though I've written it down for her. Yeah, it's quite funny, actually. I'm the IT person in my family, which is funny because, and I don't mean this to be like rude. It's just funny because they like think I'm a genius with technology, and I've just showed them how to like attach a file. Like, it's great for my self-esteem though, but yes. It's just funny because I'm not. And then we talked about that too, about intention and presence, and that's kind of how we related. And that was also a huge theme in that group, because I had two different groups, and this was the group that I talked about earlier in terms of compassion, and this one was more so on the connection one, my second group. And I thought it was so interesting because intention was a big concept that we were talking about, of when we're listening to, whether it's a family member who's in a different country or place or time zone, you know, how do we listen to them? How do we engage with them? And how do we authentically think toward them and speak toward them and with them? And I think those words and those phrases are quite different. When we think of connection, I think a lot of, it's not dialectic of, oh, I'm here to teach you something, but not gain anything. And I think that was also another comment that we shared. And while it was the umbrella of those questions, we really discussed these questions very deeply in the layers that kind of are with those questions, because we were sharing different teaching practices. And I think it relates to how do we empower, not just students, but I think other humans when we're in conversation.
Wow, I'm so encouraged that you all were able to unpack so much in the 30 minutes that you had with each other.
Yeah, they're also some group of poets.
I love how the questions you all discussed are part of our dialogue now, which will then be part of our dialogues outside of this Zoom, and then, you know, the ripple effect that these interactions can have on our lives. Yeah, I love the last one about dialogue with our families, and like, how do we really listen? And I feel like it's like the hardest for me to not respond from my, yeah. But I think family and, maybe we can do another podcast on family and dialogue. I think
I'm with that. I'm for sure with that. It's so fascinating.
It is, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. But you sort of touched on this a lot already throughout our dialogue today, Andy. But as you know, our center was founded by Daisaku Ikeda, and I know you've been engaging in his work as well. And so, yeah, I was curious, like, what aspects of his philosophy are you really resonating with in relation to your own, like, practice of dialogue and your work and research? I know you've shared a little bit about your work and what you do, and it's so fascinating and encouraging. And so if you can speak more to, yeah, the different projects or spaces you're in, and how are you sort of thinking about things through the lens of Ikeda's philosophy these days?
Yeah. I love this question. It's, I love this question because I'm also reading a lot of Ikeda, and I'm marinating and thinking about all of the, how is he connecting with me, and how am I engaging with him. I feel like I've met him, even though I've never met him in real life. That sounds weird when I say it out loud, but because when I'm reading, it's like I'm already talking to the person. One thing that I'm really resonating overall, the human education and Buddhist humanism, I think with the special focus on the poetic spirit, definitely, because I think for me, the act of looking is synonymous with the act of listening. And for me, that's a really big part of the poet's practice, but also from my understanding anyway, of the poetic spirit. And I'm thinking of how that's the same word in Japanese, the heart and the mind. And to me, that I think that is just pure poetry, one like dimension of it, but encompassing like the whole heart, and then thinking of how this connects. And to me, I'm drawing a lot of arrows in my mind of how they're all connecting, of global citizenship, you know, wisdom, compassion, and courage. And what do those mean? And the wisdom to perceive. And I think with poetry, the poetic spirit, I think, for me anyway, wisdom comes from the act of reading. I don't think necessarily reading is just reading a book. It can be. But I also, and this is kind of what I mean when I'm stretching and flexing this idea of what being a poet means. I think the act of reading can occur when we're in dialogue, reading someone's body language, reading a situation, reading something beyond the self, really, if that makes sense. And I think that's how we get wisdom. And for me, that is kind of how wisdom can be transmitted. I think it can be transmitted into our souls in that way when we're reading. I think the act of reading is not just a practice, but it's also a way to live on the edges instead of the center. So there's a sense of balance, but not in a symmetrical way. It's like asymmetrical.
I love what you said about wisdom and how it comes from reading, and then how it enables us to see like our relationships in the world. And I want to think more on that too.
I'm like jiving off of the dialogue, but I'm also thinking of the poetic spirit and emphatic imagination. And I think to me, that's how we not only get into empathy, but it's the part of how we attain. And I mean, that's probably, I don't like that word attain. I think that's how we kind of intersect with wisdom. I think you can have knowledge. Like, knowledge and wisdom are, to me anyway, two different things. Right. And I think you can have knowledge, but you're not necessarily wise. And we say wisdom comes from experience, right? So wisdom comes from dialogue. And to me, that's how it connects with reading, this dialogic engagement, because it's an experience. And that's how we kind of get into that power of imagination. And I see that how it can also connects to the poetic spirit.
Yeah. I'm marinating as well, Andy. Now I want to eat some spaghetti. Sorry.
Ooh, that sounds good. I love pasta.
Me too. Oh my gosh. Me too. I love what you said about, and this is maybe also for another conversation, but when you said that when you read Ikeda, and maybe other authors too, like you feel like you've met them, even though you haven't.
Yes.
And yeah, the idea of knowledge and wisdom. I have the same feeling when I read Ikeda's work. I remember like when I first encountered his writings, I had this experience where I just started crying. And it was almost like I was reading something that he was saying about my life that I didn't believe to be true. But then he said it, or I read it, and it forced me to, it challenged my understanding of myself. And it just brought tears to my eyes because I was like, wow, maybe how you feel about your own life is false. So I want to read that way more with other authors too. You know, I'm used to reading that way with Ikeda, but yeah, you've inspired me to have that same approach, you know, when I read anything. Sometimes I still have that sort of like resistance to reading because I feel like I'm not going to understand what I'm going to read. So
yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I really like this word, Lillian, that you said, resistance, because it's something that not only do I see, like, in the classroom as a student, but also as a teacher, like, from thinking of the different positions. But I think when we read, often, I think there's this idea to own, like, the first goal is for knowledge. But I think, and this is where I like to, what I've taken away from the poetic spirit and Ikeda's philosophy and a lot of his readings, is that I like to read with curiosity. Like, I want to play. Mm-hmm. And that's what I like to do in my mind, if that makes sense. Like, of course, I want to get, like, knowledge and to know things. But that's not, like, what I'm, my first, like, way of seeing.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder, because I think when we're reading, like, not just complex writings, but I think when we're reading, I think sometimes, I know I, anyway, can get intimidated. And I'm like, oh, I'm not going to, what if I can't do this, right? And I know my students have said that too, once they feel comfortable, of course, because that's part of being vulnerable. But I think that there's a resistance to reading sometimes, because what if we don't get it? But I wonder if, like, when we shift the way we see things, like, we're not focusing on what if we don't get it, more so of like, ooh, what are they trying to do? I feel like, for me anyway, that's kind of how I approach a poem, because I think when I introduce, like, an actual poem into the classroom, or if I want to give a poem to someone, they're like, I don't know how to read poetry. I'm not going to get it. But it's not a dialogue of intellect. It's a dialogue of curiosity, of relationality, of thinking of, how does this relate to another? How does this line relate to the second line? How does the second line relate to the 10th line, and vice versa? And then this word with the 6th word, and how can you kind of play around and make those connections? And it's not about wrong or rightness. It's a matter of, what are you seeing?
Yes. Pri and I were just texting sort of randomly before this call about texting and anxiety around texting and responding. And it made me think of just like the resistance that comes from when you're about to engage in dialogue, or the idea of like engaging with another person. And it's almost the same. You think you won't know what to say, or you won't have the right thing to say. But if you approach it with this spirit of curiosity, like, what can I learn about this person? Or, you know, what can I ask this person? Then you won't really say the wrong thing, right? Like, because you're learning. So it makes, I don't know, it even makes, like, maybe responding to a text message seem a little more joyful if it's, you know, with this heart of curiosity. So I really, really love that. Yeah.
I love what you just said, too, about the text messaging. I feel that. Oh, yeah.
Yes. Well, Andy, I could talk to you forever, and I'm not just saying that because you're here in the dialogue studio and you're awesome, but really, this has been so wonderful, and I just want to pose the last question, and one question we do ask at the end of all of our episodes, Andy, is we always ask if whoever is in the studio can share advice with our listeners if they're feeling resistance or if they're struggling to engage more deeply with others. And so I definitely want to hear kind of what you would say to someone as well. But maybe relating to that question, as a poet, what role has dialogue played in your life? And how would you, encourage someone who maybe is still coming into their like poetic spirit or who, just struggles with connecting with other people in their life? Like, how would you encourage them based on your own experiences?
Thank you. Yes. I think the first thing is reflecting. For me, reflection is like a really big piece of my life. I think that's a great starting point. I think being in dialogue with the self, it kind of goes back into earlier what we were talking about of community and how do we kind of navigate burnout. I think before we can be there for anyone else, whether or be present for like in another dialogue, we kind of have to be attuned to what's going on with the self and attuned to figuring out, well, what's the block exactly? And for me, a great like outlet is writing it down. Or sometimes I'm painting. Sometimes I'm collaging. I do miss my like being able to paint as often as I used to. But that's kind of one of my outlets that I like to do. But again, being in tune with, well, what's going on with me? And it's okay if you don't know. I think that is the starting place, the unknown. It's like, there's that common phrase even with writing of write about what you know. It's actually, I'm not a fan of that quote. It's not my rule of philosophy either. My rule of philosophy is start with what you don't know and write to figure it out. Mm. And that embodies the memoir. It also embodies the act of wondering and wandering. Mm. And to me, that also ties into Montaigne, but thinking about how do I find my way, kind of like figuring out your own map. Mm. And I think that helps with how we can connect with someone else because everybody's been lost. Everyone, at some point in their life, had a moment where they don't know. And I think that makes it universal. And I think that's what makes us connect with one another. And that's how we move beyond ourselves. Someone has experienced burnout. Maybe we're experiencing it all at the same time. Maybe it's at different levels. Mm. Maybe it looks different. And it's hitting that difference and not focusing on, and this is how I think it also ties into compassion, not focusing on, I have it worse, me. It's, wait, we all experiencing this. And who am I to say, I have it worse? I don't feel what that other person feels, so I can't quantify it. But what I can do is focus on, hey, we both feel that. And it sucks sometimes. Mm. And I think that is a way to unite, and it moves beyond the self, and then at the same time, it encompasses the self. I think that is it's hard to do, but I also think the best things in life are always hard, and the best things in life are the things that come from struggle and failure, well, at least for me anyway. And I think that's where we get into real, authentic, dialogic engagement. I never really was one growing up to speak out loud a lot. Because I didn't have a lot of friends. As I said, I wasn't as cool as I am today. But I think a part of it goes back into the willingness to be vulnerable with someone. That is a practice, and I think I'm continually learning it. But I also think that sometimes in order for someone to be vulnerable, they have to have someone invite them to be vulnerable. And something that I'm continually learning too is offering some of my vulnerability, because I've found when I'm vulnerable, I always get someone else's vulnerable self. And then I get into the meaning making with them. And to me, that is the most worthwhile.
Andy, if I could drop a mic right now, I would. Maybe we can add the sound effect of mic drop in the podcast. That was so beautiful. And I think you almost like touched on points from all of our previous episodes and wrapped it up beautifully. Yeah, it's really amazing. I don't think I have to do like an outro for this episode because it's just how wonderfully you wrapped up everything we talked about today. So yeah, thank you so much, Andy, for your time. And yeah, I hope we can have you back again, maybe with some pasta and family. Yes. And yes.
I love that. And thank you for having me. I truly, I not only love Dialogue Nights, but I really love being in these type of spaces. And I feel so grateful that we've met. And I feel really cool, but also really appreciative that we're also friends.
Wow, so much to reflect on from my dialogue with Andy today. A few things that really stood out to me. For Andy, everyone is a poet because being a poet is not just about writing poetry, but it's a way of being. It's developing the willingness to know ourselves and also see beyond ourselves to make connections with others. It's also the willingness to fail, which I definitely want to think more about. I also love what Andy said about dialogue of intellect versus dialogue of curiosity, and that for her, Ikeda's notion of the poetic spirit is not about acquiring knowledge, but about what we can learn from others. Finally, this idea that we all have experienced suffering, and when we realize that, we also come to understand that the best things in life are often difficult. And with that mutual understanding, real, authentic dialogic engagement begins. Thank you for tuning in to the Dialogue Studio today. Stay tuned for our next episode where I will be speaking with Dr. Sarah Weider of Colgate University and two emerging scholars, Julia Pelizzato and Valentina Frasiti. If you're interested in learning more about the Ikeda Center for Peace Learning and Dialogue, you can visit our website at ikedacenter.org or follow us on social media at Ikeda Center. Also, don't forget to email us at podcasts@ikedacenter.org if you have any questions or would like to share any of your dialogue stories with us. Thank you so much, everyone, and happy dialoguing!